Welcome to the Reclaim Your Rise podcast. My name is Lauren Bongiorno, nationally board certified health coach and founder and CEO of Risely Health, where we help people and families impacted by type 1 diabetes take ownership over their lives so that they can transform with more freedom and confidence. Everyone has a different reason to be here. You might be seeking knowledge, support, or community, but at your core, I know that you long for something deeper. You're here for transformation. And that's what the Reclaim Your Rise podcast is all about.
And it never dawned on me that your cycle affects your blood sugars. So specifically, my mindset really changed with just that small bit of information. Okay, you're not helpless. You just didn't know. And now what?
A quick reminder before we start the show that nothing you hear on the Reclaim Your Rise podcast should be a substitute for personalized professional medical advice. Please always consult your physician or other medical professional before making any changes to your diet, insulin dosages, or healthcare plan. Hello and welcome back to the Reclaim Your Rise show, everybody. So I have Lindsay Payne here today as my guest, and I want to share a little bit of her background with you before you press play on this episode. So Lindsay was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes on her first trip ever abroad. She was going to Germany with her family at age 12, and that incident of getting diagnosed abroad caused a lot of trauma for her that she didn't unpack and start to unpack until years later. And it really was at 27 years old where Lindsay took an active charge really toward reclaiming her health and sought to make diabetes work for her. And after years of gaps in support from her healthcare team, Lindsay ended up joining Risely's DCB group coaching program. And it was here that she learned more about the variety of factors that impact her diabetes and the mindset work, and where she really began to feel so much less isolated and alone in her experience with diabetes. And so with that renowned outlook on her diagnosis and creating so much transformation for herself, both in numbers and in how she was living day to day, Lindsay knew that she wanted to support others that experienced a similar disconnect with their diabetes and really empower them to have agency over their health. And so Lindsay is now a certified health coach for the Risely team and also works as a public health educator for the active duty military population. Lindsay is super passionate about supporting others and believes that everyone is an expert in their own life. And she leads with compassion and curiosity and employs really a first person approach in her coaching, or I should say person first approach in her coaching. So that's a little bit about Lindsay. And then on a personal note, she's a massive Taylor Swift fan. She's a tandem pump user and she loves a good murder mystery book. So I know that you're going to love listening to Lindsay and her story and all you're going to get from this episode. So without further ado, help me welcome today's guest, Lindsay Payne, and let's rise. Hello, Lindsay. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here with me today.
Lauren, thank you. I'm excited to be here.
This is your debut. We are so excited to announce and share that you are one of our newest coaches on the Risely team.
Yay.
Yay. Did you think that you would end up here?
When I had joined the DCB, I was like, how cool would that be? Like, I have a credential that fits, but nah, that probably wouldn't happen. And then the end of the year, I was like, I think it's happening. I think I'm going to do this now. This is a new thing for me.
You're like, wow, I am a coach. I went through Risely's coaching program and I think I can help other people now. So, okay, let's start with the question I ask everybody, which is in the spirit of the podcast title, can you tell us a story about a time that you reclaimed your rise with type 1 diabetes? Like a time that you felt that you were able to rise above your diagnosis, above the limitations, above the challenges, and have this like pivot?
I think for me, the beginning of last year, I had moved. I wanted to really prioritize my health as a whole, not just like physical health, but my relationship with my body, my relationship with diabetes, improving my workout routines, improving my nutrition. So kind of everything. I had a full shift and I had been following you for a few months and decided to take the leap and ask a few questions about the DCB and join. And that's what really shifted for me. That's when I felt I could reclaim my rise, and I'm still actively doing it. Since you're gaining a lot of tools in those 3 months, but mm-hmm. you're actively using them for the rest of your life. So I would say, you know, the May to August area of last year in the DCB, but you know, every single day after as well.
What were those challenges that were going on in your life, the move and other things that, you know, I often find sometimes life events are happening and that puts attention to what's out of balance in our life. And for a lot of us, it's our diabetes and it just magnifies what there's a where there's already a gap. So for you, where were those shifts happening?
Name one, and I could probably say yeah. I was fairly good with my physical activity, but I didn't feel like I had a good routine and I wasn't challenging myself. And I didn't have a great relationship with my body as it relates to just like type 1 diabetes kind of takes it out of you. And so understanding how exercise and food really plays into it. So I just wanted to hone in on having better routines for myself, even outside of diabetes, but then the context of understanding how to improve my management while still doing those things that I loved and still improving those areas of my life, but also the mental health aspect. I mean, I've dealt with depression and anxiety for many years, and part of that is definitely due to my diagnosis, but as well as how to improve other aspects of my life in order to improve my management of all of my different diseases and disorders, my conditions. So those are some of the challenges, as well as, you know, everyday life. But yeah, I wanted to take a holistic approach and kind of go every angle that I could to improve.
When you speak about the depression and anxiety and mention that it stemmed from the diagnosis, can you give us a little bit of insight into what your diagnosis was like and your relationship to that?
Oh man, kind of a unique story of my diagnosis. I was 12 years old and I was on my first trip over to Germany. So wasn't feeling that great the weeks before going on the trip. And my parents are like, well, she's 12, she's growing a lot. This is why she's more like she's hungrier and thirstier. She's losing weight because, you know, it's puberty. Yes, but also I probably had type 1 for about a year before I was diagnosed. And the plane ride over there exacerbated it, all of the symptoms. And I ended up going into a diabetic coma over in Germany. And their system is very different than ours. Luckily, at the time, it was ranked number 2 in the world for care. So I was in the hospital over there for about 2 weeks receiving care. And it was like a doctor sat next to your bedside all night long and monitored you, very little machines or few machines in general. So it was really one-on-one care and different language. Parents couldn't be there except for like 2 hours a day. So a bit of a traumatic diagnosis. No friends, only mom and dad as family. You don't understand the language. You don't have any of your creature comforts. And to this day, I'm still working through that. I feel like I didn't process it until last year when I made the decision to really take charge of my health. So I think for many years that impacted, you know, depression, anxiety, but along with other things. But for me, working through that diagnosis and what it means now and how it's like that story is not who I am. It's just how I got here.
It's really, really, truly fascinating, like how our minds work and how our body protect ourselves from when things like that are happening. But then years later, it kind of comes out. I mean, countless type ones have childhood diagnoses and then, or they have to get a diagnosis and then they're like, it didn't impact me as a child. I was fine. Everything was great. And then like years later, they make space to really like dig up the feelings and everything. They're like, whoa, there's a lot there. Mm-hmm. So with you, how did that anxiety and the depression and your relationship to diabetes manifest in the years following? Like, let's even just say like ages, the next decade, ages like 12 to 22. Like, what did it look like for you?
12 to 22. Okay. So the rebellious phase, being a teenager.
You were rebellious?
No, I was not rebellious, but it's like... terrible twos. It's like the terrible teens as well. Cause you're finding your identity. You're figuring out who you want to be. You're comparing yourself to all of your peers and, you know, you want to be liked by other people.
Yeah.
Maybe you start dating. And so I saw diabetes of like, this is what makes me different, but I saw it in a negative way. Especially when I went off to college, I rebelled in my management because, you know, I didn't have my parents around. You don't have part of your support system checking in on you and making sure you're okay. And to an extent, I took care of my diabetes just so I wouldn't have to be asked the questions, what are your blood sugars? Mm. Like, I would be like, oh, I already took it. So they can't ask that and be like, why aren't you taking it? So I lost that a little bit in college, and I got really sick with mono my freshman year, which any diabetic who has gotten any sort of virus or illness mm-hmm. knows that it really throws you for a loop. And so my management wasn't that great once I went off on my own, and it wasn't a wake up call or anything, but I held pretty steady in the 7s and 8s for many years throughout my childhood to throughout college as well. For my A1C, 7 to 8 is really where I sat. Bumped up a little bit more when I was sick, but I figured, I was like, oh, well, the doctors say that's decent. Like, I've gone through a lot. That's decent. Okay, I'm not as bad as a diabetic as I thought I was, because we ascribe good and bad to those numbers. So I think it impacted my management and the fact that initially I had wanted to do well for outside factors, like friends and family don't want to be a burden, but kind of want to get a one up and be like, hi, you can't tell me what to do. I already did it. When really that only benefits me. So it works, I guess, the reverse psychology. But then with college, I realized like I need to do this for myself, but I still didn't have the tools to do anything except catch up with it as it happened to me.
How much of the depression and anxiety, because it does sound like it has been very present in a lot of stages of your life. And I don't know if it's like one more weighed heavily than the other, or if it kind of ebbs and flows, but how did that play into really in college and just like the recognition between your blood sugars and maybe those symptoms worsening? Like, were you ever able to connect the two together? Because there are elements of obviously the anxiety and the depression likely stemming, it sounds like, from the traumatic diagnosis and maybe other factors, but there's also an element of those things are worsened, we know, by blood sugars that are, you know, fluctuating and have a high level of, you know, variability.
I did not connect my mental health conditions with my diabetes until mid last year. I didn't connect a lot of things in my diabetes until last year in general. I had my first anxiety attack that I can remember the first week of college. It was just overwhelming in the best way. And all of that energy turned into an anxiety attack. And it never occurred to me, other than when I'm sick, like when I have mono or if I have strep, it never occurred to me that anything else could impact my blood sugars. Not until last year, when I was like, let me try to figure out what's going on with me. let me do some deeper dives. So many years, probably a decade or so of depression, a little less time with anxiety, but never occurred to me that they have an impact on my blood sugars. Yeah. Until last year.
And each other, right? Like you would probably say when your blood sugars are higher and there's a higher A1C, you are feeling more of those symptoms on a heavier basis. So it goes both ways.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
What were like the biggest things in the DCB group coaching program that you came through? And I want to talk about, you know, so many other things, but your transformation I think is important to talk about, because it sets up the framework for why you're a coach on the Rise Lead team now and so passionate about helping others. But on a very surface level, looking at, you know, the outcomes, you increased your time in range 15% and, you know, your A1C dropped, but what other kind of like things did you walk away with that really made an impact on your life?
Two big things, and anyone that follows you has probably heard this word so many times. They're like, okay, I'm tired of hearing about this, but the mindset shift. Mm-hmm. It's, we can say it till we're blue in the face, until you really go through understanding that shift of how you approach not just your diabetes, but everything in life. It really changes your outlook. It changes the reactions that you have to things, whether they're in your control or not, the way you react to it. So I would say mindset being the first one, and then the second being actually meeting and talking to other people with type 1 diabetes, because I had met a few people. I'd been involved with the JDRF when I was younger, but never as an adult. And it's really not a great conversation starter if you're like you know, out at a bar and you see someone with a CGM, they're like, I just want to hang out with my friends. Leave me alone. Yes, we have diabetes. Go home. Yeah. Like, go away. But so having that, having a group of people to actually talk through stuff with, so the mindset and the group of people to talk to and really connect with were the things that I really gathered out of it, out of the DCB.
Mindset is it's an umbrella term for so many things. Mm-hmm. And I think when you say like people are tired of hearing it, and it's like, it's true. Like it really is, it's hard to understand really where the change is for each person, because mindset is something that, you know, everybody in one way or another has to work through or could work through and could work on. So for you, like really specifics and specifically, like what mindset shift or just place did you shift into of like, here's how I felt before, and then afterwards here's where I ended up, like that people can, I think, relate to?
I would say I was really discouraged with not understanding my patterns. And I kept thinking, no matter what I do, it's not making a difference. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm the one person that all of this information won't help. Like maybe I'm the exception that it doesn't get better. So I had a really negative mindset of, I had barely even tried anything to improve. And yet I was sitting here specifically talking about like periods and menstrual cycles of, I was just like, I don't understand. I'm doing everything right. And I did it 2 weeks ago and now it's not working. Well, of course it's not working because your hormones change throughout the month. And I didn't know that. I work in health. I have a Master of Public Health and 2 health related certifications. And it never dawned on me that your cycle affects your blood sugars. What works one week is not going to work the next week. So specifically, my mindset really changed with just that small bit of information of understanding my body and understanding my cycle of, okay, you're not helpless. You just didn't know. And now what? Now I get to utilize that to really improve the way that I handle my diabetes. I never even had more than 1 basal setting. Now I have 2 basal settings specifically set up for my different times of the month in which I'm sensitive to insulin or resistant. Totally changed my mindset of, oh, okay, I can do this. I just didn't have that key piece of info. Like I am capable.
Yeah. And that optimism is so key to believe, hey, this could be better, or hey, this could be, you know, something I can work on and that will pay off if I do spend more, you know, time being intentional about learning and filling my gaps and all of that. I think it's, if we haven't experienced the other side before, it's hard for us to like tangibly or even just like convince ourselves into believing that like it could be different than it is right now, because there's nothing to like anchor onto. It's like, well, what does that look like and how do I get there? And so many questions. But if you just have optimism that there is a way, then it's just about finding the way to get there. You mentioned your extensive certifications or you know, degrees in health, which is so funny because it's like, doesn't matter if you're an endocrinologist or a nurse or your master's in this or that. It's like sometimes it's easier to look at other people or to understand things on a textbook level or case study basis. But then when we look at ourselves, it's like, all right, I need somebody else to support me in that. So is that something that frustrated you ever, that, hey, I, you know, work in the world of health, or this is where my passions are and I can't fix myself?
Yes. You go through like all of the stages of grief when you find out new information that seems so basic and you're like, why didn't I know this? So at first I'm like, why didn't they tell me this? And then I sat down and I was like, who is they? And how are, like, why would they know that I didn't know that? You know, like I didn't ask questions. I grew up going to see a male endocrinologist. It's probably not at the top of his mind to talk to young girls and women of like, hey, your cycle's going to impact your numbers and your management. Let's talk about it. And even if he did, I probably would be like, no, I don't want to talk about that with you.
Yeah.
But it's kind of funny. I went through this thought of, who was supposed to tell me that? And you just don't know what you don't know. And I couldn't blame anyone for it. And I did my best not to blame myself for it anymore through that mindset shift of, I know now, I'm still young. I still have many years ahead of me. I can now use that information now. I didn't know it before. I have to pack up the anger and the sadness about going through that and not having the support that I needed. But how are these individuals you get like 15 to 30 minutes with every few months? How are they supposed to know? If you don't see a diabetes educator that are asking you more detailed questions, then you're definitely not going to get that. And how are my parents supposed to know? It was their first time going through this too. So I took a lot of that anger through the DCB and it transformed into more of like, that happened. Now what? How can I use this going forward? How can I use this to propel like other areas that maybe I did not know about? How can I make it something to learn from and to execute now in my management? So it's funny. I shifted a lot of anger into hope, which if you told me at the beginning of 2023, I'd be like, nah, I'll still be bitter. I know it.
Yeah. Well, and there are things that come into your life, and I wouldn't even say come into your life because you made it happen, but things that happen that shift your perspective and, or, you know, our personalities are, you know, the same in a lot of areas for, you know, a lot of different categories, but then our, like we're talking about the hope and the optimism and the excitement, like you would probably say now like, hey, I'm excited to continue learning more about my body and my diabetes, right? Like, would you ever have, when you were 12 years old or like growing up, been like, I'm excited to just, you know, continue to grow in my goals around my health and my diabetes?
I think maybe for the first 6 months after diagnosis, I was really excited over the fact that it made me different because people were asking questions because they were like, ooh, there's this new thing. But after that, you know, the 15 minutes of fame in middle school, everyone's like, that weird chick over there with all these external machines on her. She's got all these special privileges in the nurse's office. Like, no, I don't think, you know, within the first 6 months, but afterwards when it became very much so me and only me on that island and no one else being curious and kind about it. Yeah. I wish I could give, you know, 12-year-old, 13-year-old Lindsay a lot more grace for what she went through, having to deal with all the perceptions from other people and worrying about it, because, you know, 27-year-old Lindsay was still going through it.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, I have to say too, when we went through our last round of interviews, we had about like 50, 60 people apply for the coach role. And when we got to the stage of like mock interviews or like the mock coaching sessions, I was so impressed by your coaching skills, Lindsay.
Oh, thank you.
I was like, no, I would have never known, because you really, like, in coaching as a participant, you're receiving, right? You're on the receiving end and you don't have your coach hat on. You have your just, you know, person, Lindsay, diabetes hat on. But I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is incredible. So you got your coaching certification, your health coaching certification, and ended up in like 2019, 2020, getting a job, and you were health coaching sailors in the military. And so I would love to just for you to share more about like how you ended up falling into, hey, I want to get a health coaching certification and these are the type of people that I want to support.
So this is kind of funny. I was a big nerd as a kid. You know, in my head, I was a big nerd. I wasn't the like textbook nerdy kid. And ever since I was 10, I was like, I'm going to get a master's degree. I don't know what in, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to get one. Mm-hmm. And as I got closer and closer to it, I realized public health was where I wanted to be, more in the prevention and health promotion space. Went through, got my master's. And then there was that, now what? You did the thing. Who wants to pay you for your skills? And so there's about a 7 month period where I hosted at a local restaurant with a bunch of high schoolers and people going through college. So I was like, man, like, I know I can do so much more than this, but I applied every day and I saw a job and I was like, this is my dream job. Like, it's working with the military. I've always wanted to work with the military, having grown up in a military town. I was like, this looks on paper like exactly what I want to do. And it was working for a nonprofit company who I really believed in their vision as well. So it just felt like a good fit. But it was one of those things of, I don't think I'm going to get it. I was supposed to be, you know, creating health content as well as doing one-on-one health coaching, and they would support you in getting your coaching certification. Didn't think I was going to get it. Did the interview a few days later. They're like, you got the job. Can you start in a week? And I was like, it's Thanksgiving. And my dad had surgery like a couple days earlier. I have to find an apartment, but I made it happen. And I started a couple months later, COVID hit. And then we didn't get to work with the sailors because we were non-essential workers. And the sailors were kind of in lockdown. They couldn't do anything. So very lucky that our exams got pushed and I had a lot more time to study for the exam. I sat and I got my certification about 6 months later. And then in 2021, when they opened the world back up to the military, kind of complicated, I won't go into it, but when they opened it up to like being able to make appointments in person or virtually for these non-mandatory things like seeing a health coach, it's not mandatory for like their healthcare. I got to work one-on-one with sailors, probably a total of 8 to 10. And it's funny because they're voluntold to do it. So, and that's what I've said a few times since joining Risley is I'm excited to work with people that want to be here because every person I worked with before was pretty much told they had to be there. So the change in the quality of improvement or dedication that a client has is significant based on why they're there. If someone tells you to show up, you're not going to be that excited about, you know, working on anything. You might not even know what you want to work on. But if you're thrilled, then you're definitely going to be motivated to do it for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So what do you see as, I think there's, you know, a lot of people, I think, confuse the coaching industry with mentorship, where there are plenty of people with diabetes who will, you know, meet somebody who's newly diagnosed, take them under their wing and, you know, go out to lunch with them or, you know, talk with them, give them some advice. Hey, you know, try this pump, try that. Can you share the difference between kind of a mentor and what we do as certified coaches?
Yeah. So I can't speak too much on the mentorship portion with type 1 diabetes. I've had mentors in other spaces, but essentially the guiding and having a client in the driver's seat, knowing they're the experts on their own lives and understanding that you showing up and wanting, you know, say you want to lower your A1C or say it's a mindset shift of, I just want to feel more confident in my management. The way a mentor might walk with you would be, I'd say a little bit more friendship based, not being a friend, but, you know, there's a little bit more of a connection there where, I don't know how to specifically say it, but it's like the art and science of coaching. I feel like there's not an art and science of mentorship. It would be more so an art of mentorship. I don't know if I'm doing a good job of describing it, but with coaching, there's a lot of theories and behavior change and a little bit of psychology thrown in there just to understand how individuals motivate themselves and understanding, you know, when or, you know, signals that a client might give to want to make certain changes. Whereas a mentor, I'm all of the times I've had a mentor for anything, it's been more so like there's a little bit more of a directing style of like, I need to seek this information. Can you tell me how to do it? And then I can run from there. I can test a few different things. Whereas a coach, the participant, the client, whomever, they come up with a lot of their own solutions.
Right. And I also think to your point about the mentorship is a lot of times people who are stuck don't know why they're stuck. A, B, they might know why they're stuck, but they don't know the solution to getting unstuck. Or C, they have continuously tried to get themselves unstuck doing X, Y, Z, but they have for whatever reason not been able to stick with it, or it hasn't worked, or it's, you know, works for a certain period of time, but isn't sustainable. So it's a lot of our job helping support them in becoming more self-aware as well, I think, and creating plans in a way of like, not like a nutrition plan, but a plan of like, okay, here's where you are now. Here's where you want to be. Let's look at what you've tried already, what hasn't worked, and let's figure out what's going to work for you. And let's support you along the way and hold your hand to get there using, like you said, motivational interviewing, behavior change, filling educational gaps. For you, it was hormones. What other things do you feel like you're really excited to support people on that you feel are big gaps in the type 1 diabetes space?
Oh gosh. Everything. I'm so excited. It really is a little bit of everything. For me, my light bulb moment was understanding my cycle better and how that impacts everything. But also something when I had gone through my onboarding with you all, Amanda had said, she's like, no one had chosen that word for one of their values before. And I've realized more and more in the past few months how important it is to me. It's having grace for yourself. It's not necessarily a gap by any means. It's more so the mindset, but like having grace for yourself, and not everybody knows everything. You have your whole life and you should be learning something new every day. Like, even if it's a small bit of information you may not even know is impacting you. And I think learning to be like, it's okay. Everybody does stuff for the first time. Everybody makes mistakes. This is now new data that you have to see what doesn't work. Or maybe you take what did work and leave what doesn't. And for me, I'm really excited about helping participants with that shift of not categorizing things that don't work as a failure, but categorizing it as, this is great. You're one step closer to finding out what does work. And that is an accomplishment in and of itself. Or maybe we just tweak it a little bit and look at you, you're 80% of the way there. So I love watching the gears turn and people realize like, okay, yeah, okay, I don't need to sit here for too long and feel like I did something wrong or I'm never going to be able to do it. Because that's exactly where I was at the beginning of last year. I was like, no, I'm the one that just doesn't get it. But once it clicks, you're like, oh my gosh, okay, I'm worthy of giving myself some space to experience it, feel the way I want to feel, but then improve as well.
Yeah, I know. There's so much in that like click for each person that is individual as well. And I think that's the beauty of coaching is, right, there's all these different areas that we're going to take inventory in for you. We're going to look at your nutrition and your exercise and insulin sensitivity and resistance and how you're using diabetes technology and your mindset and self-love and acceptance and relationship to food, right? Like all of these things that really, it's like a boat. And if there's a hole in one area, it's going to start rocking, you know, everything else. And so how do we fill those holes and gaps? Lindsay, tell me, what is something that you wish more people knew about living with type 1 diabetes? I would love to end on that note with you.
I wish people were more patient. In general, I often find myself wanting to just jump in the car and go to the gym. And then, or if I do something with a friend of like, oh, let's go on a hike or let's go to brunch. Say if I forget to pre-bolus or my blood sugars are high or my blood sugars are low and you're realizing I'm holding other people back right now and I don't want to be a burden on people. I wish more people were patient with the fact that visibly you can't really see what we're going through, but we could still do pretty much everything everyone else does. It might just take a little extra time. And that consideration and compassion is like, it's really key in my management, at least, is when my friends look out for me and they'd be like, oh, I'd cut out the nutrition facts for you. Because I knew you would want it. And so it's like, oh, okay. So they took time out of their day. They were patient with understanding that that was going to be a consideration for me. Or they said like, oh, we'll let you know how long the hike is beforehand so I can plan enough snacks before. It's that patience and consideration that I wish more people, just in general too, be patient with strangers, be more considerate of strangers. It'll make you a better person, but like it makes you a really good support person too. And then I try to do the same for my friends and family as well.
I love that. You never know what somebody else is going through. And that's just a great characteristic to carry. I remember recently, actually, I mean, I've known my husband for like 13, we've been dating for 13 years. And so I you know, you think you know everything. And then I recently, a couple months ago, like just like hit me like, oh, I'm so grateful for you in this way. But I am notoriously always running late. Like I just, it's like if we're going to dinner, like just tack on, you know, 15 extra minutes, tell them we'll be there, you know, a few minutes late. And my husband, he's an on time, very prompt. And I know you're very like that. Like you're on time, you're prompt. Like I totally know that about you. And he's like, you know, 15 minutes early, that whole thing. So he's always very frustrated in terms of like when I'm getting ready and I'm still like blowing my hair and like we have to be at the place. He's like, you know, he gets visibly anxious and is like, we have to go, we have to go, we have to go. And a couple of months ago, we were like on time. We were going out the door and all of a sudden out of nowhere, it was just like, you know, an 80 double arrow down situation. And I was really feeling the low blood sugar. Like it wasn't a like, oh, let's get in the car. I was like, I looked at him and I was like, I know we're going to be running late if we don't leave right now. But like, I need to like literally just like sit on the ground right now and just have some glucose tablets. And I was ready to kind of like, not like fight him on it, but be like, just be understanding and like, this is a diabetes thing. And he was like, I got you. Like, okay, like I'll get you glucose tablets. Just like sit down. And it was really just a reminder of how important it is, I think, to find people in your life who don't look at your diabetes as, like you said, a burden, and that there are people out there that can just love you in your fullness of, you know, who you are with diabetes and your imperfections, and to hang on to that.
I'd be a billionaire for every hypothetical conversation I had in my mind trying to defend my type 1 diabetes in certain situations, and then realizing nothing really came of it. It's funny you say that, because yeah, so many times it's like, oh, I'm sorry for holding you back, or like, no, please prioritize me right now. I will argue about it later.
Right, exactly.
But yeah, those conversations, and then realizing some people just, they're like, no, I'm gonna help you anyways.
Right.
I know what you need. I've been around. So That's really lovely that he did that. But
yeah, he's
setting the bar high.
I think we'll keep him around for a little bit. But okay, Lindsay, thank you so much for coming on the show and for everybody just getting to know you better. And for everybody listening, if you are looking forward to working with either Lindsay or other coaches on the team, we'll put the link in the show notes below where you can apply, and you can have a conversation with some of our coaching specialists and see if like what program, whether it's the DCP group coaching for women with type 1 diabetes or one-on-one, may be a better fit. But Lindsay, thank you again. And we are so excited to have you on board and to see how many lives you support in their transformation.
Oh, thank you so much. This has been awesome.
Thank you so much for being here with me today and listening to this episode of Reclaim Your Rise. To let us know that the episodes we're putting out are impactful and to help us get our street cred up and let everyone else know that this is something worthy of their time to listen to, please leave a rating and review on our Apple Podcasts, send the show to other people impacted by T1D or maybe even your doctor, and share it on social media tagging @RiseLeeHealth and @Lauren_Bongiorno. New episodes of Reclaim Your Rise come out every single Tuesday, so make sure you are subscribed to the podcast so that you never miss a beat. Thanks again for listening, and as always, remember, diabetes is a challenge that we did not choose, but one that we can rise above.